Yo, what up, good morning, GMGM, Friday, February 9th, 2024. Look at that, another beautiful day. What is on me? Another beautiful day to have a beautiful day. Sorry we're late, y'all, but we are here, and that is all that matters. I got my co-host, Mando, in the house. Mando, the man of the hour, our superhero. Good morning. How are you doing today? Well, now I can't hear you. That's crazy.
He can't give us any shit now.
No way, bro. No way. You know what I'm going to do? I think Sam's, while Mando does it, let's just bring Yat up. Let's talk with Yat, because he's like, that Mr. Metaverse is the busiest person in all crypto. So we're going to bring him on while we have him. Yat, good morning.
GM, can you actually hear me?
Yes. Like the voice of God coming from the sky right now. We've been dealing with this for 15 minutes.
Okay, great. Wonderful. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good morning. Let me hold on. We usually start, I chat with Mando and everything, but that's not working. We have you right now. That's the only moment in time today that we could get you on. Let me get Open Campus on here. Let me send them a co-host invite and everything. Mando, I still can't hear you. So I guess you transferred your powers of being able to be heard to Yatsu this morning, so we appreciate you for doing so. As we only had Yat for half an hour. Yat, wow, how's everything? I saw you in Davos, well, actually Mando as well. He was like, hey, look, Yat's here. It was really cool at the Casper Labs house on the promenade, on the main promenade. How you been since? How's everything going on you guys' end at Animoca?
That's great. I mean, you know, I think almost everyone in our industry would have been in a much better mood as of the last 2 months, shall we just say. And especially today, it's pretty amazing in terms of to see where Bitcoin is in the entire market overall. And it's been driving a lot of activity in the area of gaming in particular. One of our other projects that we've been supporting called Pixels just recently was at a launch pool announcement at Binance, for instance. So, you know, lots of activity in the space. Gaming is on fire generally in the Web3 space, and just general adoption and conversation is good. So I think 2024 is going to be the year of adoption, right? In the sense that 23 might have been the year of consolidation and cleanup, I think 24 is the year of growth. And by the way, happy Chinese New Year. It's a year of the Wood Dragon.
Happy Chinese New Year, everyone.
Right. And the Wood Dragon's symbolism is prosperity, growth, audacity, and everything else that I think we're hoping for in 2024.
I love that. That's some really good stuff. And of course, like, happy Chinese New Year. This is a big moment. You know, we talk about the year of the dragon a lot on the timeline. That dragon, by the way, how do you say dragon in Mandarin? It's long, right? So, you know, does that mean something? Maybe. I am actually, yeah, I did some research because I was gonna go tomorrow for breakfast in this local place in Montreal in the Chinese quarter for like the traditional breakfast. And I found out that I'm actually born the year of the wood dog. And so as someone born the year of the wood dog, I have to bow down to the wood dragon and let him cook. Because if I don't, I may give all my money away and he's gonna take it away from me. So I need to let him cook in Web3 terms. That's the research I was told. So, look, it's a pleasure to have you this morning. It's so much fun that you're here, and I love that the update, especially on the gaming side. We're super bullish on Web3 gaming on this show. We've been talking about it for a minute, and I mean, we cover it every other day. There's news coming out, so it's really cool. And GG on the side of the crypt is just like at it a lot, so it's really cool to see. So the other thing though, that's that you're bullish on Animoca, which is something you came to talk about, which again is something that we're commonly bullish on with you, is education in Web3. So let's, yes. I kind of want to dive right into it and like ask you straight up, like, you see Animoca is wide. It's a very large company. You guys are invested across the entire crypto space in multiple, you know, companies here. But why is Animoca specifically so into Web3 education, right? We have the Open Campus account on the stage as we speak too.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, when you think about our space being gaming, actually gaming and education kind of go hand in hand, because actually whatever you do, I mean, in terms of, you know, we learn through play. And these days, you know, we learn mostly through digital play. If you think about our kids playing on Roblox or, you know, playing Minecraft, you know, social interactions. And so to us, it's a very natural fit to basically include education in the whole area. Also, I personally have been involved in education. I helped as a sort of, I'm on the board of several schools, helped found some sort of educational centers and schools in the region as well. I always felt that education was really, really important for society, broadly speaking. And also, the other thing is that education is something that we all do. I mean, we might say, for instance, that, oh, YouTube is entertainment, but actually YouTube is the largest education platform in the world, for instance, where people go and sort of go and, you know, to learn how to play the guitar, learn some facts, podcast, or vlog. Actually, those are all kind of forms of education. So we're actually doing that every single day. And, you know, education, you know, we talk about gaming being big. It is big, of course, right? Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, over 3 billion gamers. It's a $200 billion industry today and growing, especially when you add in the Web3 mix. But education, everyone does it. And it's a $5 trillion space, right? And the other thing I would also add is that, you know, we also looked at it from the lens of how do we get mass adoption in terms of, I guess, political adoption as well. And here's the thing. You know, gaming is great and financial sort of, you know, literacy and sort of financial growth is all great. But unfortunately, these aren't very popular political narratives. But you know, politicians don't get elected because they provide better services for gamers, at least not yet, maybe in a decade or so, right? And also, when it comes to sort of the Wall Street effects that crypto has enabled, Web3 has enabled, unfortunately, that's not necessarily very popular amongst a certain group of people. However, if we can make teachers more money, or actually, if you think about it, some of the largest, really probably the single largest creator group in the world, then that becomes a powerful political block, a very strong voice. And actually, you know, if you can basically educate our teachers about Web3, then guess who they're going to educate next? The next generations and the people thereafter. So as a center, I think focusing our attention on education, I think is really important for broader Web3 adoption. It's also important for the narrative. And I see it very similarly to how, you know, when we looked at gaming, most people forget that we got into sort of evangelizing in Web3 gaming in late 2017, 2018. It was a long time ago. And similarly back then, a lot of people didn't see it. And of course, today everyone's talking about it. And we kind of think education is the same because in some ways it's everywhere, but nowhere, right? It's kind of like, because we do it every day, we somehow forget that actually we do this. You know, just ask your parents how much they spend on education on you. Right? And if you don't have children yet, you might not actually fully appreciate just how much you spend on that. So it's a generational thing. And eventually, everyone here in crypto land is going to go, maybe have their first kid, and then they, I want to send them to a school, I want to hire a tutor, and oh, damn, how much money did I just spend?
Sorry, give me anxiety attack here. Yeah. Starting to get stressed out about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is, I think the other thing is, and this is what's so great about Web3 is, you want to actually reward the very people who are giving the most direct value to whoever it is. And so in the same way that we can give artists direct value, we can now give teachers direct value for the services they create for our students, as an example. And they're today, again, facing the same problems in the Web2 platforms. They're being disintermediated. Teachers are, you know, like in the US, for instance, are amongst one of the lowest paid sort of people, given the fact that the role that they're doing is perhaps one of the most important. I mean, they probably spend, many of our kids spend more time with teachers in school in a week than probably even with their families, right? If you think about sort of working families and all that kind of stuff, and yet we pay them way, way less. So there's something wrong with the system. And I think Web3 can solve that. And so that's one of the reasons we're so focused on education and with Open Campus and with TinyTap.
So I love what you're saying here because it's, I love that because I've been saying like, when we founded Rug Radio originally, was always on the premise of like education and entertainment, of course. So it's a mix of both, like you get on this show, for example. And I always said that like creators are kind of the educators of our industry right now. Like they're in charge of like either entertaining you or some of them will educate you. Like, for example, Mando and Ovi do in the morning with the market reports and stuff like that and different topics that we try to cover. But those are people that pay the least. Like just recently in Quebec, where I'm from, there was a huge strike and the schools were closed because teachers were rightfully demanding some help, right? And it's always, it feels like it's always last people that we think about in society, yet, you know, they're the people taking care of our kids. I mean, Mando just had a child year and something ago. Ovi, you know, he's about to happen in 2024, you know, wife is pregnant.
Full awesome. Market baby.
Full market baby. That he's going to, yo, your baby's going to be born the year of the dragon.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
cool. But yeah, I wanna kick it back to you and ask, like, so where does blockchain technology fit here? Like you said, you have TinyTap, you have Open Campus. I'm very familiar with both brands and companies, and it's really some just great companies you guys have funded here. But like, where does blockchain technology come into play here? How does it help?
So yeah, exactly. So let me just give you one example. There's multiple, but let me give you one example that I think is easiest to illustrate. You know, one of the powerful things about Web3 is the fact that we have property rights, as in this case, digital property rights, which means that we can now allow for capital and value formation. So normally, when you have an intellectual property that could be created by anyone, including a teacher, it needs a certain kind of value before you can actually turn it into sort of a product that you can then basically license and sell out. Because, you know, if it only makes $100 a year or something, that's not worth sort of having a legal construct and all the settings around that to basically sort of sell it on for some kind of capital value, because the cost of the lawyer and the legal construct and the systems around it are just too expensive. But when you encapsulate that into an NFT, you're actually able to have the legal provenance, the intellectual property rights, where the money goes in a single transaction that costs less than a dollar, which means that we can now allow capital formation to be created on intellectual property assets that could make as little as just a few dollars a year, even if that's what we wanted. So imagine the scenario. For instance, teachers in Venezuela make between $10 to $15 a month, which is not a lot. And if they make content on TinyTap, which then becomes content in which they could earn a royalty on because of the fact that people are subscribing to it. That's what TinyTap does. But TinyTap is kind of like a Netflix for educational content, which, by the way, serves about 200,000 teachers today and roughly 8 to 9 million families. What? And so what happens here is that when a teacher makes content on TinyTap, on the creator tool, they then basically make revenue because a parent or another teacher uses it and pays a small subscription for it, right? Kind of Netflix style. Which means that the content then becomes basically a layer which basically makes money. By buying the NFT from any third party, the royalty, 80% of that, up to 80%, can now go to the new buyer. And which means basically that the teacher has just created his own intellectual property stream. Kind of like, you know, you're a musician and you're basically now able to sort of, you know, sell your royalties on to someone else as a single product. So that means capital formation is possible. So if this content makes $100 a year, he might sell it for $500 or $1,000. Which means that whoever's buying it might make, you know, somewhere between 10 or 20% yield, which is not bad. The teacher makes more money and reinvests it into more content. The owner can actually market the product and actually make more revenue because now he or she has this product that maybe they could sort of even promote further. So for instance, we had a Japanese entrepreneur who bought, you know, in some of the early auctions, bought a lot of this educational content earlier on, and, you know, paid tens of thousands of dollars for it. And then basically started selling this education content to Japan, helping localize it, and basically created a bigger market. And so something that was making maybe $10,000 or $20,000 a year now makes double or triple that because she ended up doing some entrepreneurial activities with it, which then also showed us something else. Teachers can make great content, but it's not paired with people who know how to do business. But if a business person comes in and says, wait, I can take this content, I can make it even more famous, or I can make more revenue from it, then we both basically can benefit from this. So in a way, it's also tied in the people who know about money and entrepreneurial sort of enterprises with the content creators, in this case, teachers who don't know much about it at all, which is something that's never happened before, right? Teachers were always isolated doing their particular tasks. They don't necessarily know how to run a business because they never had a product that was worthwhile selling. And basically, NFTs can help solve that. And so that's kind of how we think of this as kind of revolutionizing publishing. And so we call these the publisher NFTs, which is basically a kind of NFT, sort of innovation around the NFT space that allows teachers and creators to basically have intellectual property rights and revenue streams that come from, you know, ownership of these NFTs.
Wow. This is sick. Like, you know, the meme, like, blockchain fixes this. It's like, this is happening. Like, it's not a meme. It's like, it's actually fixing, like, there's a opportunity for it to fix the educational system. Mando, I saw you on mute here. Did you have something, or you want me to?
No, I see how this ties in. Like, there's a lot of headlines even a couple of days ago, right? Which was a quote which you were saying, which is like NFTs are the building blocks of capitalism, or digital capitalism, and that kind of did the round. I think every major news outlet picked up on it. I can kind of see exactly how this fits in to that. It's definitely not a realm which I think a lot of people have looked at from a capitalism standpoint, but then again, teachers aren't making that much money, so maybe this is a important way to go down that. Is there anything else, like, when you take a step back, you're like, wow, this could also be revolutionized with this sort of concept?
Well, I mean, everything, if you take it away from the concept of teachers, what NFTs allow you to do is they encapsulate your intellectual property rights. And that means basically everything essentially can have the benefit of this capital formation, which is why we think NFTs are pillars of digital capitalism in this case, right? Because property rights are the basis of a capitalist system today. The fact that I can own my house or own my car is the reason why I can have value formation. It's the reason why we can have assets, and which is the reason why, frankly, economies flow, right? If we don't have property rights, we can't have capitalism. And in the digital space, pre-Web3, we actually didn't have any property rights because everything was owned by a platform. We're just rentiers. We don't have the right to actually do anything with this stuff because it's not really ours. I mean, even if we have 1 million followers on Instagram, they don't really belong to us. We can't take them away to where we want to because they don't belong to us. And so this is basically what Web3 really fixes. And of course, the other thing that happens is that when you have capital formation, you're actually creating significant value that was kind of already there, but now something that's distributed amongst sort of the general population, which is, again, something that we've seen in history, right? When we moved from feudalism to basically democratic capitalist societies, actually what happened was it wasn't that it was taking money away from essentially, you know, the kings of their time. It actually created more wealth overall and more activity because people were able to build new network effects on top of it. Right? So we see this kind of in the NFT space as well. You know, if you own a Bored Ape, someone else can make a game on it. Someone else can target you because you own that ape. Someone creates sort of new skins and costumes, and they can even have the right to basically do a burger joint or, you know, sell alcohol or create water. They can basically build all these businesses because they own the rights around that particular ape, as an example. That's actually what property rights enable you to do. And when you forecast a little bit into the future, it used to be that we used to think that, you know, our property was a form of our labor, you know, in the classic Lockean sense. But today, our labor is no longer that physical. I mean, some people do physical labor, but frankly, you know, when you look at the future, machines and robots will do all that kind of work. So what is the labor that is valuable to us as humans? It's what's in our head. It's in our mind. It's in our creativity. And so teachers are creating creative content to educate our kids every day. Artists are doing this every day. Game developers are doing this every day. The future of work is going to be very much the work of the mind. And so we need to find a way in which we can own that. And this is basically why we need a digital context for it, because it's not scalable for us to sign legal contracts for every time we think of an idea, but NFTs can do this at scale immediately.
It's going to be the work of the mind is a banger. Go on, Mando. Sorry.
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment. I do think for a while people have said, you know, it's the building blocks of ownership. You kind of need for it to be fully the building blocks of like ownership. You do need like courts and you need everything to kind of catch up with it. Like how do you see that happening? Like, I haven't looked. I know TinyTap is based in Israel, right? So, like, how do you look at stuff like courts in the different jurisdictions you're in? How do you think about stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, we always have to obviously collaborate and work with governments because at the end of the day, we still live in a physical context. You know, as much as we like to be virtual, at the end of the day, we still have to eat and sleep and pay taxes somewhere. But the base idea still is, you know, you first need to prove ownership before you can even talk about it. And so this is the point about Web2 is, let's say I use a platform like YouTube and I make content. If YouTube deletes it, how do I prove that I actually owned it? The only company that can tell me whether I really owned it was YouTube. And if they feel like saying, I'm not sure where that is anymore, which has happened many times, then your content is lost and you know you don't have any way of proving anything because actually a third party has become the arbiter of your so-called property. But in the terms of services, you don't have that property anyway. In blockchain, you actually have the ability to prove that, you know, the moment it was minted and created. And so this is another thing because it's immutable on the blockchain. And that basically becomes the almost the governmental ledger, as you will, right? It's a record keeping to prove it, which is the first step that you need in order to then say, okay, I own this provenance. Now I can actually go to court if I have to defend and protect it, which is basically, for instance, if someone steals your Bitcoin, you know, 5-6 years ago, people were like, what's this? But now you can go to the police and you can file a claim and say my Bitcoin was stolen because they've accepted that there's a way to actually really prove that that was your Bitcoin. And therefore, we can basically put a claim and we can do all that kind of stuff that's necessary to protect our rights around that. So I think all of that will sort of very naturally flow in. So what blockchain solves is essentially the provenance first, the authentic ownership for which then we can basically build legal structures on top. And I think the other thing is that, you know, even if the content is only generating $100 or $1,000 a year, when you can prove that, there's another element of enforcement, which is social enforcement. Right. So when you think back in the days when we were hunter-gatherers, how were we able to, you know, there was no government. How were we able to enforce essentially sort of our rights? It's because everyone else knew that that was your cow, right? So because we're just 100 and 150 people. So even if I ended up taking, you know, Farouk's cow, then, you know, basically Mando and OSF are like, well, you know, hold on a second. That's Farouk's cow. That, you know, yeah, like we say it's his cow and therefore you must return it. Because within our social circle, we had consensus. The problem is that when we became hundreds of thousands of people, consensus was no longer possible because we really were transacting with strangers that we didn't know each other. So we needed government to come in and basically say, okay, this is how it's organized. This is how I knew what was doing is what. Blockchain solves this because this entire sort of provenance is now on chain, meaning that, you know, if it's Farouk's digital cow, then, you know, everyone knows it's his cow. Exactly. And if I happen to take that cow, then, you know, everyone else around the ecosystem will know that I took the cow. So it's a social enforcement that comes, which we see today when there's a hack. We create, you know, before the police is even involved, actually there's a social mechanism around blockchain that creates already an aura of defense and analysis and all that kind of stuff because everyone can see it. So I think, you know, that will sort of create more of a sort of, you know, the social enforcement layer that wasn't possible in digital until today.
So, by the way, that was so good. Thank you, Amanda, for asking, because I think there's a lot of gems in here and for people to really understand like different use cases of the blockchain, why the blockchain in general. So definitely we need to elevate all this. But you came here today to speak also not only about TinyTap, but Open Campus, right? Like they're on stage with us right now on the Twitter Spaces. So say if you're on here, we're both on video and audio with Yatsu, founder of Animoca. You've all heard of Yat before, his legend, Mr. Metaverse, and he accepted to come on video with us. The open campus stuff is where it gets really interesting, right? Like I saw it's actually a really big deal. So do you want to talk to us about, you know, what Open Campus is? Like what's the lowdown on that?
Well, I mean, I think you'll hear a lot more about Open Campus, but the way that you can think of Open Campus is that we're basically building it as a kind of educational layer for schools, institutions, and teachers and creators in that field to basically use that as a way to onboard into Web3 and basically build it as the educational platform that really doesn't exist in Web3 today. And in some ways, it's kind of wild to think that, you know, there is nobody else really doing education at scale in Web3 when it is, in fact, one of the most important pillars of any society. And you've probably heard me speak this before, which is that I think of blockchains, layer one, layer twos, and metaverses kind of as national economies, right? And the way to basically, you know, one of the key pillars of any kind of economy is the state of education that you have in the space. And it's a protocol, basically, you think of it as that sort of enables and empowers, you know, educators in the space. And, you know, it's powered by the EDU token. So it's a token infrastructure. We have a creator fund, which is $10 million to basically help basically people who are interested, you know, in sort of furthering Web3 education. They can go for grants. It's a DAO, so that means that you can put in your proposals and you can vote on things around sort of which proposals should be funded. That basically sort of use sort of you know, it could be, you know, I think we have like Web3 literacy programs, we have sort of educational K-12 programs, you know, all that kind of stuff to basically help advance that. And there is an actual very practical sort of, you know, financial incentive here, because when you create content, you can sell that content, and right, the content has educational value attached to it because a qualified teacher is doing it. And the buyer of that content doesn't necessarily have to be a Web3 person. It can be someone else who's like, oh, I want this English content. They don't necessarily even have to know that Web3 is powering the back end. They would basically be using it on, you know, participating okay platforms like TinyTap, pay a fee, and then basically that fee gets paid to the owner of the NFT, which they can basically buy through Open Campus. And we've got financial institutions like gyms, we've got schools, we've got, you know, and most recently we sort of announced a partnership with Forbes with the OC100, which is basically sort of trying to honor essentially, you know, the movers and shakers of Web3, and particularly that are sort of pushing it forward in education and so forth. So there's, you know, it is still an early initiative, relatively speaking, you know, but it has, you know, significant financial power behind it. And that's, again, something that you can really only do in Web3.
Wow. This is sick. Like, you guys are, this is really, really good. Like, I love what's being built here, and it's super interesting. So, I think a lot of people should look into that. So, what are some big wins, right, that you guys, you know, that the project nailed so far? Like, what are some really
cool stuff you've done? Yeah. So, maybe one other thing that, before I go into the big wins, maybe I just wanted to highlight as well is, you know, when we think about sort of, let's call it impact investing or for purpose investing, there aren't a lot of projects out there where you can say that if I own this token or if I own this NFT, I'm not just potentially sort of, you know, having personal gain out of, you know, whatever effort I could make out of this, but also I'm helping a broader cause. And by the way, we do this, for instance, today when we choose to sort of, you know, buy green, or we choose to sort of, you know, be sort of, you know, energy friendly, or we basically look at sort of, you know, sustainable environmental products as an example. And there hasn't really been a mechanism to do this for education, when you think about it, even though we all can agree that education is very important, that teachers need to be paid more, that value should be shared across educators more broadly. And so really, you think about it, for the first time, if you actually get involved in the project, you're actually helping a broader cause, in this case, make teachers more money, which then basically creates a positive flywheel, right? So, and I actually think that's one of the other sort of hidden powers of Web3, which we can do with NFTs or other kind of projects. It's not just about sort of, you know, something that is sort of artistic or beautiful or pure utility. There's also the whole element around actually doing something that has really positive impact, which by the way, I think will be a trend in the future as well. Meaning it's not just going to be in education. It's going to be also for like animal welfare. It's going to be for all sorts of other areas, you know, like other good causes where, you know, through a tokenized infrastructure, you can basically sort of help create sort of positive causes that are also not going to be charity, but actually can be profitable. And so, you know, the example here would be the publisher NFT sales that we did. You know, we had the last sale that we did had over $1.3 million of demand, which for educators is a lot. Oh. And, you know, some of the teachers ended up making, you know, literally half a year to a year worth of their salaries from the sale of these NFTs. And, you know, this is actually, again, something really quite fascinating because, you know, when someone like a teacher, a creator makes more money, the natural thing they do is, you know, they might spend a little bit on themselves, but then they hire their friends and they build more educational content, right? You know, and this is the thing, right? If the person involved on the other side that's making money is mostly there for financial gain, which we have a lot of people in the initial Web3 space as well, they tend to buy other things that aren't necessarily going back into the ecosystem. But, you know, and by the way, we've seen this with NFT artists, right? If NFT artists make money, sure, they might buy some nice things for themselves, but they also buy more NFT art. Yeah. They get involved in the ecosystem and they reinvest in it because they're builders, right? So, you know, giving builders more capital actually makes the building environment bigger and better, broadly speaking. So again, we've seen that effect. You know, we have several, I think like 7 cohorts in the accelerator. We have an open campus accelerator. We want to bring up to 100 educational companies into the ecosystem by the end of the year, which I think would be quite impactful. We have also launched our open campus ID, which is basically sort of a way in which we can sort of start tracking your educational identity and your data around that. Just think about sort of, you know, some of the possibilities that could come from that. You know, how do you do provenance, you know, on chain in terms of, you know, your degree or your background? I mean, just think about today, when you're actually trying to sort of verify someone's background, what you have to do? Well, you have to call the college, right? You have to get their permission. Yeah. You have to figure all that out. Or could you just do it on chain with permission from the end user in a zero knowledge proof way? He doesn't have to reveal everything. He just has to reveal the things that he needs to reveal. And so I know that, okay, he went there and okay, he did this degree and everything else doesn't really matter because really why, you know, when you send your sort of a CV to work or wherever it is that you do, do they need to know everything on your background, right? They really only need to know the pertinent things that you give them permission to. And that's, again, something that blockchain can solve. But, you know, some of the other things that are going to be, I think, pretty pivotal. And again, we're not doing them yet, but think about the space that education covers, right? It's not just learning and education. It's things like student loans, financial services. I mean, these are massive, massive industries that are basically controlled by people who are really abusing, essentially, their monopoly positioning. And we know what Web3 and blockchain can do. Now imagine what happens in a world where you can actually take this type of power that Web3 can already enable, which by the way, is a $1.7, $1.8 trillion space today, right? Underpinned by Bitcoin. And you can actually provide some of that, let's say, value down to the student level in the form of potentially loans or something like that. How could that change the world, for instance? And how could that actually create more opportunity in a manner that is more fair and equitable? So, you know, I think the possibilities are endless. I think if once you start going to the education rabbit hole, you start to understand that's why it's a $5 trillion space. And Web3 is, I think, ideally suited to help change and alter and disrupt it for the better.
I could listen to Yatsu speak for hours, man. I don't know about you guys. I mean, Ovi, Mando, the future of education is bright, huh? You guys have young, you know, Ovi's got one on the way. Mando's got one, that's a year old already. I'm bullish on my future kids when I hear stuff like that. this is cool, honestly. Like, yeah,
I think it's a space that needs to be revolution. I mean, there's been some companies that have been very, very popular. I think if you can form degrees or qualifications which people can start to be internationally recognized, that would be the real end goal of something like this, because then it can have incredible power, I think, or maybe on board some of the already internationally recognized qualifications. But yeah, it does feel like a space where the incentives are often misaligned. It's very, very difficult for people to track quality. Like, the only time you can really track quality of kids' education is like parents teacher meetings, right? Or and this is a much better way of potentially seeing the value in different courses. So, and it, like, courses are so big in post education work. Yeah. So, like, you know, people have been selling courses for a long, long, long time. So it does feel like that's a space that could move in here relatively quickly. So yeah, I think it's a very smart industry. I didn't realize it was that big in terms of I guess obviously public spending too. But
well,
yeah,
just think about how much your parents and how many, for those who may have taken student loans, just add up that amount of money before, you know, until university. Just work back and just start calculating what that sum is. And then suddenly you're going to go, wait a second, actually, maybe that's not even that much relative to the scale or size that we invest in, right?
Institutions, those institutions that you might spend, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on, like, are any of the big universities interested in this sort of platform?
Have you seen those university endowments? I mean, these are Fortune 500 companies, which is like, what? I mean, you know, like, the idea originally when I first grew up, you know, I was thinking educational companies, it ought to be sort of a little bit more sort of on the sort of social enterprise style. And then, like, wait a second, these are money making machines, right?
They're not for profits, man. They're not for profits. You should know how they run.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Oh my, I love that. So yeah, look, I know we had to start late because of all the issues we had, but I do have a couple more questions for you, and then, you know, we're gonna free you, so you can go enjoy your, hopefully the celebration is coming up. What's the game plan, right? 2024, you know, it's going to be a great year for crypto thus far. It looks like it's going to be a great year. You know, we're going to get to the market report for everybody listening after we're done here, but it looks like it's going to be a good one all around. So what's the game plan for Open Campus and Mocha? And then, you know, of course, like, what are the exciting stuffs you guys got on the horizon?
Well, I mean, there's a whole bunch, but let me first start with Open Campus. I sort of teased a little bit earlier, you know, Open Campus ID, obviously the design is to have that be a core primitive basically in the entire Open Campus ecosystem, you know, for the learner profiles we just talked about, you know, the acceleration program as well, you know, the funding that we set aside for basically people creating content around that area, bringing in many more sort of educational companies that are not in Web3. You know, stay tuned for some sort of pretty big protocol-based news around that area. And initiatives like OC 100 and Open Campus University that basically really aim to spotlight creators and sort of spotlight sort of, you know, what education in Web3 is all about. And again, you know, I gave the examples earlier, we just have to scale that out. In some ways, the good news is that because it's such a sort of nascent Web3 space, it can really only go up in terms of growth, right? It's a little bit like, as I said, it's like gaming in 2018, 2019, right? It's like, it seems like a really small space, but actually when you think about it naturally, it can only really grow and expand. And we're obviously hoping that there'll be a lot more participation. But then of course, the other thing that Animoca is also quite focused on for this year is the Mochaverse, right? Which is another basically concept for us that basically helps tie in essentially the Animoca ecosystem of our 450 plus portfolio companies and our various subsidiaries into essentially one ecosystem, you know, not just in governance, but also in terms of basically using that for basically a sort of, you know, like a decentralized team, you know, like examples, for instance, like we've invested in over 150 games. And the expectation for us is obviously that, you know, why would you have to basically launch like your KYC every wallet every single time when you basically can just simply do that by having a single ID, for instance, you know, and being able to share those network effects basically across your entire network is what we're hoping that Mochaverse can do. And it's been quite a successful sort of community build up You know, and it's kind of cool because it was built over a bear market, right? I mean, it's we started it in 23, which is really, if you think about it, arguably a bad time to do stuff, but that's actually the best time to do stuff because it brings in a core group of people who are really here for the long term. Because if you were thinking about sort of, you know, a quick flip, you probably would have left by early 23 and would have been a little bit shy of the space. So it's, I think we've had the good fortune of building a really strong community. And as you know, it was effectively almost a $0 mint. And right now, I think it's maybe around, I think it's like 4 or 5 ETH, whatever the price is, you know, in terms of the floor price. But, you know, I think the whole point on this one is it's actually helped put together a really strong community. And we'll grow it from there with, you know, the Mochaverse ID, which I think is slowly approaching 500,000 active users at this point. So again, these are the things that we are going to be focusing on, you know, outside of games and investments. You know, we've been very active investors in 2023. Many of the games actually that are about to launch are now launching this year. It does take 2 to 3 years to make good games, as you know. So the cycle of game launches between now and the next 12 to 18 months will be very accelerated. And so as a result, I think, again, we should be expecting to see more broader Web3 adoption from Web2 people who may not even necessarily know that they're playing a Web3 game, but they're basically, you know, are getting onboarded into this whole sort of Web3 ecosystem.
Wow, that's exciting. Yeah, it looks like you have a busy year ahead. Looks like you have a busy year ahead. Well, I'm gonna bother you for one more question. What are sure. a couple of predictions you got for 2020? What are you some like? Give me like 2-3 predictions for the year of the dragon.
Okay, fine. Well, if I'm going to be bold about this, I think that this 12 to next 18 months, we should be hitting our first sort of 100 million users, I think, in terms of the native Web3 space. So I don't mean people owning crypto in an exchange. I actually mean people sort of interacting basically with, like, you know, wallets and then games and that kind of stuff. I think, you know, gaming and hopefully education will help drive that and sort of grow that space. That's one, I guess, sort of hope that we have. The second one, I think gaming will drive a big part of that narrative, particularly in the first part of the year, just because of the fact that I think, you know, the games are launching and you'll see a lot of, I guess, success in the space as well, just because we see this, for instance, what's happening with Pixels and what's happening with, you know, the revival of Axie Infinity on Ronin. I mean, the network effects that are sort of bouncing back from each other, right? I mean, people don't generally talk about it. You know, how Axie is doing really well because it, you know, the media doesn't want to talk about that, but actually Axie is doing incredibly well, for instance, right? And as an example, and the space is broadly recovering in a really good way. The other area I would say is I think this is a year of Asia, in the sense that, you know, Asia has been at the forefront on the regulatory side of things and has basically been pushing forward, particularly when it comes to Web3 culture, so gaming, NFTs, and so on. The biggest game companies in the region in Asia are actually adopting Web3. You know, Korean, Japanese game companies are all doing Web3 related projects, one form or the other, in stark contrast to the US, for instance, where they're still shying away from it. And I think, it has a lot to do with the context of how they view, you know, capitalism and the fact that their user base is, you know, not as friendly towards it for the time being. But we've seen the same thing with sort of free to play and the freemium business models in the early days. So I think we will see more natural growth coming from Asia than the West. However, don't count out the West. I mean, but I think the broad market, I think, will be good. It's an election year. So generally speaking, we should expect this to have actually a positive impact just because people don't want to create too much instability for all sorts of reasons. I don't see, knock on wood, any kind of major black swans. I think last year, the settlement with Binance was probably the biggest single issue that our industry had to fear. And I think we are sort of clear from that, which is great. And it also told me something else. It told me that contrary to what some naysayers would say, the US isn't out to kill crypto. Because if the US was in fact out to kill crypto, they could have done far, far worse than put an expensive penalty that Binance can actually afford, right? It told me that the US agrees that maybe crypto and Web3 is systemic or it's important, or has reached a scale that essentially has a point of no return in the sense that we have to sort of figure it out. And, you know, maybe the SEC and some people there don't agree, but the rest of the American government is not on the same page, which, again, is one of the beautiful things about the American democratic system, right? It's not top down that way. So I feel quite positive about this. And I think that it was a market clarity we saw. The rest of the world is going to be adopting Bitcoin spot ETFs because after all, the US doesn't need to have, shouldn't have all the fun. Hong Kong has already received a number of applications. And I think it's quite possible that Ethereum spot ETFs might actually come sooner in other markets.
Ovi loves to hear that. OSF loves to hear that.
Yeah,
absolutely. Anyway. Yeah.
Yes, but it's great. It's great. Look, I'm as I said, Year of the Dragon 24, very bullish on where it's going to go. I mean, we're generally very optimistic people, but as a the last 2 months, if the last 2 months has been any indication, then I think 24 should be a really good year. In fact, if I had to put down a worry, I would say overheating too soon.
Yeah, it's look, we don't want to overheat too soon, that's for sure. But Bitcoin is looking great this morning, yet hitting, you know, the best monthly or weekly candle we've printed in 4 months. Just saw that. Yeah. So we'll take that.
I mean, I think the one thing that, you know, people, and I think one of the other hopes that we have, obviously, I don't think this will happen in 24, but long term, is that when we get people into Web3 and, you know, they become basically more financially literate. Just because they have to understand Web3, because everything is kind of in the lens of financial value and services. And I think, you know, hopefully that also means, and this is to me, I think, the bigger picture, that we can basically teach people more about why capitalism is important. Because I think we've reached a point in time right now, which I think is quite dangerous, where people, you know, it's become fashionable to start talking about Marx again and talk about sort of, you know, socialism in this manner. And again, I grew up in Austria, in a social democratic country, so I'm not anti-socialist per se. But the point is that, you know, capitalism is the engine of growth. It gives us entrepreneurial spirit. It's the incentives that we have that we can have this disruption. And all the people who are basically sort of criticizing crypto are actually also critical to capitalism because they fear it. And one of the things that I say to people is that actually capitalism is a proxy for change, right? We live on disruption and change. Innovation doesn't happen because it's harmonious. It happens because we create basically disruptive, crazy new ideas that can change the world. If there wasn't capitalism, we wouldn't have Tesla. We wouldn't have green energy. We wouldn't have, you know, all the things that we enjoy today if it wasn't for that incentive. I agree that the distribution of capitalism has gotten messy. But I would also add that's because in the Web2 world, we're not living in a capitalist environment. Because think about this, Facebook, Amazon, Google, they control the market. It's not a free market. If you buy advertising on Facebook, who decides actually what the algorithm, who owns the algorithm that decides what you should get? Why is it okay that when you spend advertising, you have a 1 to 2 or 3% sort of success rate? What kind of success rate is that? If you run a restaurant that has a 1 to 3% success rate, you're out of business, right? So the point is that actually the Web2 companies have taken away capitalism from us. They've created their own essentially means of ownership of these productions and have sold it to us basically in this sort of colonial manner. And Web3 basically actually will save us, I think, by reintroducing capitalism and hopefully educating people about the benefits of this, because essentially it's anti-monopolistic in nature. And actually, you know, think about sort of, you know, how the markets evolve. I actually think that I think Web3 will basically sort of hopefully bring capitalism and the spirit of capitalism and the hope of capitalism back to everyone.
Wow. Well, those are some great last words, Yat. So thank you so much for coming this morning. Obviously, always happy to give you guys a platform with your building. You know, I think Open Campus and Tiny Tap and what Animoca is funding in terms of education is very important. And honestly, it was great just selfishly to hear it here and be able to understand more about it. So thank you so much for coming this morning, Yat. And glad we made it happen despite the troubles of the beginning. And again, hope you have a wonderful New Year.
You too. Happy New Year. And thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
Thank you. See ya. All right. Well, that was a different start for the show this week, but it was a great one. And it was a great conversation. I mean, Ovi, Mando, that was a lot of fun. And a lot of fun, that one. Yeah, love having Yat on. Ovi, I'm glad to see that you moved apartments and it's seemingly your Wi-Fi still hasn't gotten better. But
how is it still lagging for you right now?
No, I'm just playing with you. It's working fine. It's working fine. Why don't we do this? So I know we started late. Why don't we go maybe a little quick little market report, because it does look like we're getting Shabbat candles. And you know I like my Shabbat candles. You know I like my Shabbat candles. Are they back? It looks like they may be back. So I'm going to kick it to one of y'all in a second for market report. Then quick through NFTs. And then look. We have $1,000 to give to someone in the audience. All you have to do is retweet the Twitter Spaces. It's pinned at the top. It's also at the bottom right, purple box. Drop a GM, follow Robit, follow FOMO Hour, and retweet the space, and you may win $1,000. But also, the two loot box guys from Tuesday. I hope y'all are here, because I fixed the loot boxes. I've been maintaining them. Now, there is now a 99.95% chance of winning an NFT. So I fixed that, and we're going to get you guys on again. But quickly... Quickly, why don't we talk markets ahead of this weekend coming up? Mando, what give me TLDR, man. Listen, you even saw me. The ghost of Capo, after going through Ovi, somehow like tickled me inside, tried to sway me that we were going to go towards the 30Ks. It looks like Bears once again in shambles, obliterated, crying back in the mother's basements. What's happening in the market? Looks like we're pumping, baby.
Yeah, we're pumping. And it's mainly Bitcoin again.
Can you hear him?
I can hear him, but he's out of sync.
Like big time and far. Dude, today is like the day of the nothing working. This is the day. We hear you, but you're out of sync and you're low. Shit. Well, Ovi.
Yeah.
Just break the market down for me.
Yeah. I mean, look, if things are fucking off to the races right now. The S&P 500 is above 5,000 for the first time ever. We're at, once again, new all-time highs. NASDAQ is quickly approaching 18K. Interest rates have been stable. It's pretty, you know, we're obviously seeing a large crypto rally today with Bitcoin hitting north of 47K and ETH momentarily hitting 2,500. But I just want to say, like, the underperformance of crypto versus stocks in the last 18 months is still incredible. Mm-hmm. We are at new all-time highs in stocks, and we keep hitting new all-time highs every single day. And
crazy. In
crypto, we're still 50 to 60% off all-time highs. So we're all excited about crypto this year because we're finally seeing some price action and things are moving and people are making some good money on altcoins and stuff out there. But we're still, you know, a big, big magnitude off where we would be had we been tracking stocks since the crash in 2022. So I think that kind of explains partially the reason for this big crypto move. I think some of the ETF data has been pretty strong as well. But it really is a risk on mm-hmm. rally right now across global markets. And I just think with the way things are going with stocks right now, and this is post the big macro risk factor, which was the FOMC. So we've kind of digested that now. And we do have inflation next week, but we'll see what comes of that number. It does feel like markets want to keep rallying here. And I just think crypto has to catch up. I think Bitcoin has to catch up. ETH has to catch up. And alts will catch up too. And yeah, it's tough. It's tough. I know I've been a bit more conservative recently, but with those GBTC outflows now normalizing, and with there being a really strong macro rally as well coinciding with this, it's really tough not to be once again very bullish on crypto here, because everything else around you is performing very well.
Yeah, love to see that. You're right. I was just showing. I mean, look, I'm not a big macro guy like you guys, but I also keep reading that the stocks keep ripping higher and higher. We talked about Meta last week. Obviously, you see a bunch of the different stocks like on the tech side that are just flying. So it's the American economy is rolling right now, at least the stock market is. And glad to see crypto, I guess, somewhat playing catch up here, Ovi, right? Because you're right. It was not going the same way for a minute. Mando, are you back with us? Let's test one more time.
Yeah, is it okay now?
Yeah, it's better. Just hear you from afar, but it's okay. We'll do what we have. So tell me,
I don't have my
I know. It's okay. It's one of those days. It's one of those days. You know, it is what it is. We still delivered a fire interview with Yatsu, so I'm not mad. And it's Friday after all, so it's chiller. Look, that's that on the market side. You know what, then? Unless there's like something crazy that you really wanted to cover, Mando, but I'm assuming you were probably going to go in and say similar things.
The only thing happening right now is 404s.
Yeah.
People around with those, and then it, like Obi said, just like everyone's getting really bulled up on these ETF inflows. Like they are relentless. As don't fade the ETF, right? Like
it's
every single day, it's 100 million. That starts to really build up. So
do you reckon the Coinbase desk or the Gemini desk just there, and they get this little like RFQ saying of 100k bitcoin.
Yeah, what we're referring to is like when we used to be traders, you used to get these tickets just pop up on your screen when someone needs to buy something. You'd be like, oh, I want to buy this. And with the ETFs, it would be relentless. It would just be like you couldn't even see other apps on your screen because there'd be so many tickets coming in from the ETFs. And I reckon that's what they're facing right now. There'll be some ticketing system where they're just getting pop-ups every 2 minutes being like, yeah, I want to buy. So I don't know how you fade Bitcoin. Like Bitcoin right now, there's big shorts at 50K people are looking at. But then, maybe this is the breakout. You get there. Maybe we hit 50K and we retrace a little bit. But those are just massive, relentless inflows, it feels like. So I just don't think you can fade that. People are getting very, very, very bulled up.
Also, I mean, this is even better for ETH, right? Because, you know, a lot of people, you guys have been saying this on the show too, like if the ETFs get approved, and if it's closer, which is something Yat actually touched on himself, and I saw you smirk there. You were listening for that part, Ovi, that's for sure. That could be bullish for that. But anyway, so it's very exciting. We'll see what happens over the weekend, of course. And we'll get excited about that on Monday. NFT-wise, some pullbacks across the board when it comes to Bitcoin. The RSICs went under 0.1. They were to 0.128 yesterday, went back to 0.05 or something. 0.05 based on some comments like Casey made, but that seems to be a nothing burger. Quantum Cats 0.26. The Puppets even retraced a bit, but seems that everything's bouncing in this morning. Love to see that. ERC 404 is of course getting all the attention on the NFT front on ETH. Those collections are doing really well, and then Pandora is still pumping. There's a lot of good stuff happening there. Of course, some good CryptoPunk sale. You absolutely love to see that at all times. And then last but not least, on Solana. I mean, Solana as a general has been like very, very quiet on the meme coin and the NFT side since Jupiter, but also a lot of stuff happening on ETH right now with 404s and everything and Bitcoin. Like, you know, it's again, like, it's a participants thing, so people probably follow the money there, but Solana itself, like the token, is at above 105 and seems to have broken that you know, it was it 102 103 Mando that it kept kind of being smashed back down at. So
I think it's just Bitcoin, man. Like Bitcoin dominance is rising. Bitcoin is beating most altcoins today.
Amazing.
So that's, again, it's beating most altcoins. This reminds me of when Bitcoin went from 26K to 35K. Altcoins didn't move, and a lot of people were annoyed. If you bring up like Bitcoin dominance, that's the real thing to look at here. We went from about 50% to now breaking towards 54%, I think, roughly. So yeah, that's the one. And I personally think that could be a bit of a move here. Like obviously you had that dip a couple of weeks ago, but now it looks like we're breaking back towards those highs, and this one feels strong. Like this one feels very, very strong to me. I think Bitcoin dominance, I would be unsurprised if that heads towards 60%. So, and in that world, you're thinking Dubai, a lot of people looking at some of the Bitcoin alts again, which have started to move. You started to see, it's not that I don't think altcoins will move, but this could be one of those periods where like everyone in altcoins is sitting there going like, fuck, I should just have Bitcoin, because it can be quite painful.